Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We're going to have a great program today. Before we get into that, first I have to turn to our listeners and ask a little favor that you might consider sharing with us your comments, your ideas. Perhaps there's a topic you'd like us to pursue. Whatever it may be, we'd love to hear from you. Let me give you two ways to reach us. The first is the good old-fashioned put a stamp on an envelope and send it to us. Well, our address is Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. And the zip code in Greenwich is 06836. Again, that's 06836. If you're on the computer and rather email us, please do so at clemens10@aol.com. That's C-L-E-M-O-N-S, the number 10, at AOL.com. While you're on the computer, I'd like to encourage you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today, and you can find that at spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. Very important. If you hit com, it'll be a whole different thing. And while you're on that site, you can find a number of different articles and features, and also our radio program, Thoughts for the Week. And so I now move on to what I normally would introduce my co-host, Dorothy Riera, but Dorothy could not join us today. But thank goodness our guest is able to. I'd like to now welcome to Thoughts for the Week, Deacon Thomas Cabean. Deacon Cabean, welcome.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, delighted to have you here. For those who may be listening here or, of course, with the computer or anywhere in the world, Deacon Cabean is a deacon of the Archdiocese of Hartford, and he has a fascinating life, a fascinating tale of not only his pursuit of the diaconate, but also his coming to the church itself. What I'd like to do is begin by asking you maybe a little bit of your background you might want to share with us.
Sure, I'll be happy to do that. I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness, and I was involved with Jehovah's Witnesses from 1954 to 1981, so quite a number of years. About 12 of those years were spent at the world headquarters of the Watchtower Society in Brooklyn, New York. And I was involved not only as in charge of many of their printing operations, but I also was a featured speaker at their major conventions and a radio personality. I was on a radio program that was created by and for Jehovah's Witnesses during the early 1970s. I believe about 71 to 76 I was involved in those programs. And then I left that. I began to understand or feel like there was something wrong with the way they understood the scriptures, and particularly prophecies that they had made or predictions that they had made that didn't come true. So I began to search for a different path around 1980, and that eventually led me into basically agnosticism for several years, and then I got involved with evangelical Christianity. By that time, I had a child, and we moved to Milford, Connecticut, and we were involved with a couple of churches there. This is a very, very top-line, 30,000-foot overview of what happened. But I began to read the writings of the early church fathers in the process of preparing a class on the history of the church. I realized I didn't know very much about the actual history of the church.
For those listening, the church fathers, they're sort of the generation contemporary to and immediately following the apostles, perhaps?
Yes, in fact, right on up until they're basically divided into two great categories, which are the anti-Nicene fathers, which are the fathers that came between the apostles and the Nicene Council in 325, and the post-Nicene fathers, which are after the year 325. So, so I began to read the earliest Christian writings, those who were contemporary with the apostles. Quite shocked I was that to find out how they viewed the Christian faith, what they believed, and how they supported their beliefs. It was really an eye-opener for me. So I sort of fell in love with this faith, and I began to pursue it more. I had no knowledge whatsoever of the teachings of the Catholic Church, and it never even occurred to me that I should investigate to see if there were any contemporary churches that taught those things. So I was involved with a couple of different churches, including eventually an Episcopal church. And as I was involved with that church, I happened to come across a copy of the Catholic Catechism. And I read it, and I was shocked to find out that I had, somewhere in the process of reading all of these things, become a Catholic. But I didn't know. I believed all of the things that were taught in that catechism. So I began to talk to my wife and my two sons, and long story short, my older son and my wife were received into the church in 2006, and my younger son in 2008.
Wow, that's quite a way to go. But, well, here you are. God bless us. Thank goodness. Yeah. Now, when you were studying, well, first off, maybe our listeners might be interested to know, how do you first proceed, once you knew you would like to become interested in diaconate, how you proceeded from that point to getting involved in the program, and perhaps how long that program is? And
well, I came to the church primarily because I believed that the Catholic faith was true, and I, especially the teaching of the Eucharist, that it is indeed the body and blood of Christ, I wanted to receive that Eucharist. So that's why I came to the church. Once I was in the church, I was encouraged by a couple of people to apply for the diaconate. Although I had been in ministry for much of my life, I was an elder or a leader in the Jehovah's Witness group, and I was also an elder in the Baptist church. But I had once I became a Catholic, I wasn't really immediately interested in being a deacon. But someone suggested that I should apply for it, and probably as a way to discern whether it was really God's will for me to do that, I did apply for the diaconate, and I was accepted into their aspirancy program. And then after a year of reflection and discernment, I was accepted into the formation program, which lasts another 4 years. So total, it's about a five-year program from the beginning to the end, to ordination. I was ordained in 2014.
That discernment year, did you have a particular I'll use the term spiritual director, but did you have a particular director helping you along there, or was it?
There were classes that were held, and we met with people who were deacons. We talked about what was involved in being a deacon, what kinds of demands are made upon your life, whether you should do it if you have a family, small children. We also talked about other issues that might come up as a deacon. And then we also went through the entire catechism again. Went over it to make sure that you were in full agreement with the Catholic faith, that you didn't have any questions about it. And we learned about how to discern vocations. Mm-hmm. We learned about how to do meditative prayer and a number of other things that were quite helpful in discerning our vocations. And at the same time, we also went through psychological testing and other things to see whether we were suitable for this type of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. When you began to study, I presume, the diaconate, certainly you could find mention of deacons right in the New Testament writings. What the function of the deacon in the history of the deacons in the church, I didn't know whether you were aware of the entire history, or what could you tell us of the history, our listeners?
The diaconate, of course, the church has developed quite a bit. And I don't know, to answer your first question, I'm not certain that it was the reading about the diaconate in the scriptures or in the writings of the church fathers that encouraged me. I think I began to understand a little bit more about it. The role of a deacon in the Catholic Church is quite different from the role of a deacon in many Protestant churches, especially the evangelical Protestant tradition that I grew up in, because in an evangelical church, in many of them, the role of a deacon is to do things like clean up around the church, mow the lawn, other kinds of things like that. So in the Catholic Church, the role of a deacon is quite different. And having read the early church writings, I came to understand that there were some true differences. And to explain a little bit, the earliest mention that we have in the early writings and in the Bible of those that might now be considered deacons were the seven men that were appointed to wait on tables when there was a little discussion between the Greek-speaking and the Hebrew-speaking women about the distribution. And Stephen, one of those, was actually the first martyr of the church. And there have been many other fairly interesting and high-profile people that were deacons in the early church. Now, I found out when I became a deacon, and I hadn't thought much about this, but the deacon does not really work for the priest. And in the Catholic hierarchy, there are bishops, and there are deacons, and there are priests. And in that hierarchy, the deacon, the word deacon actually just means a servant. And in the first century, that word was just used for a household servant, somebody who might wash the clothes or prepare meals and serve them. But in the church, those servants, that servanthood was configured to the bishop. So deacons were actually quite important figures in the early church, and many very important people, saints, have been deacons down through the years. St. Francis of Assisi is a good example of a deacon. St. Lawrence, of course, St. Stephen. And surprisingly, the deacons were like the right-hand man for the bishop in many cases, and they often took care of responsibilities that are now handled by priests. For example, distribution of funds to the poor and needy was done by deacons. These things would be handled by another, usually by priests these days. But I found out in looking at a brief history of the diaconate that in the Middle Ages, the early Middle Ages, between 432 and 684 A.D., so we've got about 250 years approximately, out of 37 men that were elected pope, only three of them were priests before they were elected pope. All the rest were deacons. So theoretically, and I put that in big quotes, a deacon could be elected a pope, but the likelihood of that happening today is
a little remote, yeah.
Rather remote. Yes. But just to continue very briefly, after that period in the Middle Ages, the late Middle Ages, the diaconate became more of a path to become a priest. So it was when a man wanted to become a priest, he became a deacon first. And that was the transitional diaconate. But after Vatican II, the ancient, original, permanent diaconate was restored. And so now, again, I am configured to the bishop. On an organizational chart, I work for the bishop. He is my direct supervisor. He has assigned me to work at parishes in Milford, and I cooperate with the local priests there fully, but they are not really directly my supervisors.
Let me give you what might be a typical lay understanding or definition of a deacon. Well, he's someone who could do everything a priest could do except actually say Mass and anoint the sick. Well, let me let you fill in a little bit more than that. A deacon obviously is their own entity, as you mentioned, a clergy responsible to the bishop. What are some of the functions of a deacon?
A deacon is an officer or a member of the clergy, if you will, And they are empowered or get authorized to do things that many that priests would do. They can baptize. We can baptize children up until age 14. We can witness marriages. But to be honest, there's very, very few things, almost none, that a deacon can do that a properly deputized layperson couldn't do under certain circumstances. So taking it from the other direction, instead of saying we're almost a priest, except we can't do a couple of things, it's we're almost a layperson, except we can do a couple of things. And one of those things that we can do that a layperson can't do is we can preach. But even that does not come automatically with the diaconate appointment, with the ordination. You have to prove before our preaching board that you can preach, that you have the capability to do that. And if you are appointed by that preaching board, you are also allowed to give homilies and read the gospel. The layperson can't read the gospel. But it's not as glamorous as it might seem. There's not much that we can do. We're mostly authorized to serve, to serve others. And that's really in the spirit of what it means to be a deacon, to be a servant of others.
Now, of course, one of the interesting things about coming in as a deacon, I presume, I would think that the vast majority have had vocations or careers in secular pursuits, and somewhere along the line, I was drawn to the diaconate, and they decided to move in there. I'm just fascinated with, do you find that you bring to your ministry as a deacon a lot of the experiences or a lot of the skills developed during your life in the workaday world, shall we say?
That's a good question. I don't know how much I could say what you are as a human being, you know, become is a compilation of all of your experiences in life.
Maybe I think in particular if you do counseling or you know, you automatically could relate perhaps to a lot of circumstances that...
Well, we are not counselors, and so we're cautioned to be very careful about giving people advice. And if it's people come to ask for advice, I tell them very clearly, I'm not a licensed counselor, and I'm not authorized to give you professional guidance in these matters. I can give you advice as a parent. I can give you advice as a husband. I can give you advice as a business person, but I can't give you... I mean, some deacons certainly are PhDs, they're counselors, they're professionals in those fields, but that doesn't come with the office.
I guess I was really referring to just what you mentioned, that I can't speak to them as a husband, I can't speak to them as someone who ran a business involved in the world, the corporate world, and I can't speak to them as a parent. So you have a lot of great positive skills to bring you.
It is true, right. We are often spoken of as people who have one foot in the church and one foot in the world, in the sense that secular world, and we can use that to our advantage, because we're called upon as Christians to live a Christian life in the secular world, but in many ways we can relate to people in the church in ways that a priest might not be able to relate with people, especially if he's a religious rather than a parish priest. And that in those ways, we can really bring something of value to the church. And we also bring the church to the secular world. That's the other side of it. When I was working, I retired recently a few months ago, but everybody in my office knew that I was both a Catholic and a deacon. And in fact, when I was ordained, a number of them, including my direct supervisor, came to the ordination. So we have the opportunity to bring information and skills from the world that are needed in the church, and we are able to bring from the church the spiritual gifts that the church has out to the, bring them to bear in the secular world.
Mm. Now, in the work that you do, you obviously have to deal with pastors, or a number of pastors, depending on how involved you are, and the bishop. What type of structure or relationship exists between you and, let's say, priests or the bishop?
Well, I'm very good friends with a number of priests. I enjoy working with them. I've never had any kind of difficulty with a priest. We work together. I'm there to serve. So anything that I can do to serve, to help them, even if this priest is not a priest that I'm assigned to directly work with. I attend a Mass at a church that's very close to my home, and they happen to have a 7 o'clock Mass, and I go to that Mass because it's convenient for me, especially it was so, and in fact, it happens to be my home parish, and I'm quite close to the priest there. I have been friends with most of the priests that have been assigned there, and so there has been never any kind of a difficulty as far as I'm concerned with any of the priests that I've worked with. Some of them I'm closer to than others. The bishop, although he is my supervisor, he and I are not on a first name basis if from that perspective, or you know, he doesn't call me to ask my advice on anything. I've seen him a number of times and spoken to him. He's a very fine man, but we're not. I've worked with priests much, much more regularly, and I have a much different relationship with priests than I do with the bishop.
Well, I guess in taking a look at what you do now, because you're uniquely are coming from a background that speaks a lot of your ministerial involvement, and now you're coming into a whole new reality for you. I'm just wondering what have you found most challenging in your diaconate so far?
I think my most challenging thing is time management.
Mm-hmm.
That has been very difficult, especially when I was working secularly. I was working many hours a week, and I had a fairly difficult commute. So almost all of my diaconate activity was done on weekends. And sometimes it was tough because I needed some rest as well, and I didn't want to, because I was working full-time, to find time with my wife and my family is a little difficult, and trying to find time for all the things that might be required as a deacon, probably one of the biggest difficulties.
Now retired, I presume that's changed a bit for you.
It has. In fact, it allowed me to come onto this show today. So
delighted about that. Well, okay, challenging part now. How about satisfaction that you've found to be truly satisfying in what you do?
Well, I love the Catholic faith. I truly do. I have found in it, I believe it to be true. It has answered all the many questions that I've struggled with as a Christian all of my life. I love people. I like working with people. And so the diaconate has provided opportunities for me to share my faith, talk to others about the Catholic faith, and to get to know people in a way that is more fulfilling and more rich than it was prior to being a deacon.
Mm. What have now, of course, you know, you become a deacon and you're involved with a deacon. Along with that comes your wife and other family members. I'm just wondering how they related with your diaconate work.
Well, my wife is wonderful. She is very supportive and helpful. And in fact, before you can become a deacon, before you can even enter into the formation process, you have to get a letter from your wife saying that it's okay for you to do that. And then once again, after you've been through the whole process and you're ready to be ordained, she has to give her approval one more time. And if she doesn't give it, you're not a deacon. So
the wisdom of the church, I'll tell you. Oh my gosh. When you work, as we spoke, or at least asked a question vaguely about the relationship with the other clergy, also understanding is how well have your parishioners received you, or how do you feel that connection is
it's developed? Been wonderful. No, the parishioners have been wonderful. I love them. They're really great people, and we've had an excellent relationship. Again, being a deacon gives me a chance to relate to them in a way that a parishioner normally wouldn't be able to relate to them. It doesn't give me any advantage over them or anything. It just gives me more opportunities to be with them under different circumstances, and I enjoy that. I like that.
Do you find particular a particular approach that parishioners may have to you in regard to? Do any ask about the diaconate themselves? Any men approach?
Yes. Some ask about the diaconate. I've had a couple of people, in fact, apply for the diaconate since I came, but I don't know if it had to do with me or perhaps the other deacon in our parish encouraged them, but we've had a good time, and they've been quite respectful and helpful. I've really enjoyed so much working with them, and encouraged them to reach out for any kind of vocation.
Mm-hmm. As you take a look at the diaconate itself, I am just wondering if ever the rules change and you're ever to become a priest, married priest, obviously, would you be interested in that?
I have to tell you, of course, I'm 67 years old. There's no way I will ever become a priest. That I don't think would ever happen. But I have to say this. I do support very strongly the church's position on celibacy for mm-hmm. priests. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult, having come out of the Protestant tradition, it's very, very difficult to balance the responsibilities of a parish and the responsibilities of a family. And I have to say, I really believe that it is wise that the church has elected to keep priests celibate. I think it gives them greater freedom to serve the needs of the parish.
That's interesting, that comment. I thought back to comments of our founder, Father Mark Connolly, and he's a clinical psychologist, but I remember him telling the story often on the air during programs of a little bit of a survey he did once with the wives of Protestant ministers. And he asked them, you know, what about for Catholics? You know, I mean, that's a question. Do you think they ought to be allowed to be married? Every single one of them said no, you know. And here you
I can agree with them. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now my final question before the program wraps up for today is, those who may be listening, those who may be interested in perhaps sticking their toe in the water, well, how could they learn more about the diaconate program, the diaconate itself?
Well, there's a wonderful little section on the diaconate on the USCCB website, and it's just look up diaconate USCCB and you will find it. And then if you happen to be in the Archdiocese of Hartford, you can find on the local archdiocesan or diocesan website, there will be information about the diaconate as it's applied in that particular diocese.
I presume anyone can just go to their own parish and ask about?
Yes, you can. You can ask any deacon.
There you go. Best thing to do, probably. Well, I'd like to thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Deacon Thomas Cabine today. And to our listeners, please join us again next week. God bless you all.